Tonight we're covering the topic of the four levels of relaxation, and it's about creating a balanced life from inside out. And during these turbulent times, the ability to relax is essential to our well-being. And so we're going to have Mike George share the four levels of relaxation and how to relax at each level and why it's necessary to be systematic about how you relax through each level. And then the benefits of staying chilled anytime, anywhere. It's pretty much a description of meditation for me. But yes, let's see where Mike takes us. Mike George is an author of 16 books, and by the sound of it, there's going to be a couple more by the end of the year. They include Learning to Relax, Don't Get Mad, Get Wise, and The 7 Myths of Love. Mike's a coach and facilitator for companies and communities in over 40 countries. I'm going to invite you to send in your questions through the question and answer link. Mike's going to share with us for around 40 minutes, do a very short meditation, reflection, and then after that, he will be taking your questions. I will be taking your questions and posing them to Mike. So over to you, Mike. Thank you.
Great, thanks, Artie. And a very warm welcome to everyone. Thanks very much for tuning in. And it's my pleasure to do the Friday night show from screen to screen. Eh? Who would have thought that the screen business would have gone on for quite so long? I would have thought we'd be back in the big halls by now, but it looks like screen karma continues for a few more months. So as Artie was saying, the purpose this evening is to just explore a few ideas and insights, I guess, which have worked for me and which I now understand are essential if I'm going to find the deepest level of relaxation. It's not an easy journey, and the journey is a metaphor, of course, but it's not an easy process to bring these insights and realizations to life inside myself, to fruition inside my consciousness. But what I'm going to do is kind of draw a little bit of a map, and then encourage you always to it's not going to be very valuable until you draw your own, until you begin the whole process of exploring for yourself. And so the four levels, which is the title of the talk, four levels of relaxation, pretty obvious, really, takes you from the physical to the mental to the emotional and to what I call the heart level, the relaxation of the heart. And heart, for all intents and purposes, is the self in a sense, not the physical heart, that's not what I'm talking about, but the heart of consciousness. We have two hearts, the heart of the body and the heart of consciousness. And that heart of consciousness is another word for moi, for me, for I, for the I that says I am. So I'm going to just quick insight into each one of those four levels. And of course, they're all connected. You can't separate them. It's a bit like a television, you know. Someone said, but how does the television work? And then someone said, well, let's take it apart and see. And as soon as you take it apart, it stops working. And so it's a little bit like that, is that we'll take these different aspects, these different levels, if you like, of what's necessary to relax at each level. But of course, they all affect each other, they all influence each other, and they're all integrated within our consciousness. And so, as Artie said, please do feel free to throw up your questions or comments on the chat page as we proceed. And I hope there are some questions because I much prefer answering questions than just talking at a screen. It's much more fun and more challenging as well, more interesting. So please do feel free to pose your questions. So the first level, of course, is the physical level, and it's pretty obvious that the four corners of relaxing physically, of diet, sleep, relaxation, rest, basically, and exercise. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this level because there's a ton of information. There's a tsunami of information all online, all virtue, or thank you to Dr. Google and Professor Amazon. You can drown in insights and information around these four areas. Diet, sleep, rest, and exercise. And of course, it's up to each one of us to find our own balance with each one of these, because each one of us is different. We're going to have a different requirement at each level, a little bit more rest at some stages, a little bit more sleep at other stages, making sure that the digestion system is working and the diet is appropriate to my particular metabolism. Wow, we could go on. We could talk for more than 40 minutes just on this one level alone. So physical relaxation requires that I do the work of experimenting to find, to see, to establish what works for me in each of these four areas. And so, as I say, I'm not going to spend a lot of time looking at these particular areas, but just perhaps one thing is this ability to take myself away from everything. And certainly we're getting the opportunity to do that now with things called self-isolation and social distancing and so on. But this ability to take myself away and be comfortable on my own, as I was mentioning to Artie before, it's essential that we find ourselves being okay with ourselves on our own and the ability to take time out and just relax. And there's different ways to do that. However, I won't be able to until I'm able to relax the second level, which of course is our own minds. And then this takes us into the whole universe of thinking, if you like, or this idea that how do I relax my mind? And many people think, well, I've got to think positively, first of all, and not be negative in my mind. And I'm going to say, well, it doesn't really matter too much whether it's positive or negative. And ultimately, if you do choose to explore this level of your creation, basically, because all your thoughts are created by you, you'll eventually discover that there's no positive or negative because your thoughts are created in your consciousness. In yourself, not in your body, not in your brain even, but in your consciousness. And in your consciousness, there's no positive or negative. There's no duality. There is in the world around us outside, but inside there isn't. So if you're interested in your thoughts, then you'll probably want to do a Sherlock Holmes to see where your thoughts are coming from. And your thoughts arise essentially from your beliefs. The beliefs that you've learned, you've assimilated, you've adopted somewhere in the past from some people, probably parents, culture, teachers, etc. You've just believed what you've been told, and then you've recorded those beliefs in your consciousness. And so situations and people and words, they come from outside as sounds, as physical feelings, as experiences, as scenes, and they trigger your belief to life. And you don't even notice it. It just throws up a thought and the thought into your mind. And so that thought is neither right nor wrong. It's not good nor bad. It's just a thought. But of course, we're very quick to judge I shouldn't be thinking like that. Oh, I should be thinking more like this. Oh, I shouldn't be like that. I shouldn't. And so you can see the tension of I shouldn't. I ought not to. I've been taught not to think like this. I went on a positive thinking course last year, and they said I shouldn't think that. I should be thinking more like this. And so you can almost sense the tension I'm beginning to create just from observing my own thoughts, just for a moment. So this is the old idea that, if you believe the world's a dark and dangerous place, which is what most people do, and it's what we absorb, especially from the media today, it's a horrible world, it's a dangerous world, then you will perceive situations and events around you darkly. You will perceive them. You'll interpret them as danger, basically. And you'll think, this is dangerous. This I have to stay away. I mustn't engage with. I must go. And so you begin to think accordingly. And then you generate a lot of fear, basically. Whereas some people who believe the world is an adventure playground, they'll perceive situations and events and people and relationships as an opportunity to learn, to play, to be creative, to be adventurous. And so their thoughts will be quite different. Now, it's not that one thought is set of thoughts are wrong and one thought's are right and you should be thinking this way and you shouldn't be thinking that way. It's just a question of becoming aware of the belief which is originating the thinking. Yeah. And the more you become aware, the more you will challenge that belief, the more you will look beyond, look past the belief. Neither belief is right or wrong. It's just a belief. Yeah. So you look past it, and you will, as you do look past it, as you go beyond the belief that you have, oh, someone taught me that. I've been listening, that's a horrible dark place, or I've been hearing all these speakers who say it's a fantastic life full of opportunity, you've got to get out there and make the best of it. I've been absorbing these ideas for so long now I can see where it's coming from, and I can see that I'm actually holding on to the belief that I've created, having been influenced by the dark and dangerous or the adventurous opportunist, if you like. And so I have created my version of that belief, and I'm holding on to it, and it gets triggered, and one result of the triggering is the thoughts arise in my mind. So I've got to kind of see this if I'm going to be the master of this process. And so whenever you're triggering your unrelaxed mental state, always know that behind that state, there's some kind of belief or belief system. Yeah, and of course, that unrelaxed mental state is a state that I can change. Yeah, it's a state of consciousness that I can change. So we all learn lots of different beliefs on our journey through life. The main one, of course, is that someone else is responsible. And anytime you react to anyone, or anytime you think they should, they must, they have to, as soon as you judge someone, then it's like you are energizing the belief that you've learned somewhere in the past that someone else is responsible for my life, for how I feel, for what I do, for my journey, if you like. And of course, as we know, we've switch on the TV, switch on any movie, and you can see, you can sense how you're being taught to believe this. Yeah, and so if you question it, then you might discover a deeper truth. Yeah, and this is why being curious, questioning, not out of, oh, that's wrong and that's right, not out of resistance, but just out of curiosity. Wait a minute. If it's not them, then it must be me. Now, what is it I'm doing that I need to change to not make myself so mentally unrelaxed all the time? Yeah, and so you discover a deeper truth. And the deeper truth, of course, in this case is that I'm responsible. It's not them. I'm the creator of how I feel, of what I do, of what I think. It's not them. It's always me, always me. And so that deeper truth then sets you free from being captured by this belief that you have assimilated and you've created your version of it and you've held onto it in your consciousness. It sets you free from that trap, if you like. And now, of course, it might be difficult to take responsibility initially because you've spent your whole life creating habits of blaming and complaining and criticizing and having a go at people, and that's upsetting me and so on. You spent your whole life creating those habits. They're part of your personality now. So it takes a little bit of time to go, wait a minute, it's not them, it's me. Oh, wait, hold on a second. Can't blame anyone for anything. Sounds easy, isn't it? But of course, it's quite challenging. But that is the kind of work we all have to do at some stage. Otherwise, you spend your whole life perceiving yourself as a victim. Yeah, and this is not a new idea. I'm sure you've read it, heard it somewhere else before, and it's not bad to hear it hundreds of times. It took me hearing it 100 times for the penny to really drop and to start taking responsibility for my own life. And of course, when it comes to our relationships, the other belief is, which our parents are pretty good at teaching us, is that we can control other people. You know, they taught us that they controlled us. If you don't do what I say, I'll be very upset. Oh, okay, okay. And so we learn to believe that we could be controlled. And so we grow up expecting to control others. But the deeper truth here is you can't control anyone. It's impossible. Everyone gets to live their own life. I can't control anyone. Yeah, even if I put a gun to their head and they go on their knees, they choose to go on their knees. It's not my choice, it's their choice. Yeah, and so if I really get that, then I stop trying to control, and then I stop creating the unrelaxed state of frustration when people don't do what I want, which is an early form of anger. Yeah. Yeah, it's challenging. Maybe the underlying insight to that, and I could talk just on this subject alone for the whole evening, is the other person is never the problem. Yeah, the other person is never the problem. Yeah, it's my version of the other person. Yes, because we create versions of other people in our consciousness, in our own minds. Yeah, I create my version of you in my mind. It's not, so if I'm upset with you, it's not you I'm upset with, it's my version, which is different from the next person's version, the next person's version. And the person who gets on with you all the time, their version is completely different. So if I'm attacking you, which is criticism, judgment, complaining at you in my mind, it means I'm sabotaging myself. Oh. You know the old saying, the truth will set you free. If you really get this, it sets you free of the unrelaxed state of criticizing, of judging, of complaining, of blaming. Because whenever you bring that mindset, those thoughts into your mind, then you're making yourself unrelaxed. Yeah. So it's never the other person. It's always me. Doesn't matter what they say. Doesn't matter how close they are to me in my family or outside the family or in the house or outside the house, in the office. It's never them that makes me feel. Oh. Yeah. And so there's a whole lot of beliefs that we've learned and assimilated, which give rise to thoughts that are essentially not right or wrong, but they're not accurate. And when I say accurate, they're not aligned. They're not coming from the truth, the trueness, the true state of being that I have at the core of my consciousness. Yeah, and everyone has that true natural state. And when your thoughts arise from that state, then they arise accurately. And that's what I'm trying to kind of point out, the accuracy. It's not the other person, it's your version. It's not them that's responsible for you, it's me that's responsible for me. So these are kind of core truths. And when you are in your core, you know, when you're not subject to the conditioning, the programming, the belief system that you've absorbed already, when you're in your core, when you're coming from your core, you'll see this naturally. And it will throw up the accurate thoughts in a particular situation. And ultimately, a lot of that over time generates what's called wisdom, your own natural innate wisdom. And everyone has the capability to generate that wisdom. And most people express and demonstrate that wisdom in some way or other at some stage in their life without really going, oh, that was very wise. They just do it naturally. You don't think it. They're just responding with their own personal wisdom. Everyone has that. So this is how I need to, the kind of inner work I need to do to relax my mind is to there's got to be a period where I challenge what I've been taught to believe and to rediscover the truth. And that requires introspection, you know, it requires an increase in awareness, self-awareness. And that for each one of us is different. You can't compare yourself with anyone else, but it requires that kind of inner work. Now, as you do that inner work, you will encounter the third level of relaxation, which is the emotional level. And you'll become curious. You'll say, why am I getting angry all the time? Why am I getting so frustrated? Why am I so scared and sad and upset? And why am I experiencing these emotions so much? And for most of us, they're tolerable for a good length of time. We put up with them. We think they're human nature. And so we, well, nothing else to do but put up with them. They seem to just come. They just seem to be reactions to what's going on, until one day that the unrelaxed state becomes so intense. Sometimes it's called suffering. The suffering becomes so intense that you have to stop and go, wait a minute, can't take this anymore, need to do something about it. And most people won't do the introspective, you know, cultivation of self-awareness work until, most people, until that suffering, that unrelaxed state of consciousness becomes so intense. Yeah, until they hit their kind of brick wall, as they say, sometimes in some quarters. And so if this does arouse your curiosity, then you want to begin to understand where my emotions are coming from. Why am I becoming habitually emotional in the same situations, in the same relationships, in the same place almost every day now? You know, I feel this emotion. Yeah, and so you might become curious. And if you do your Sherlock Holmes on your emotions, you know, I like the metaphor of Sherlock Holmes. In other words, if you look very closely at your emotions and you see behind them, you'll notice that all emotion comes out of attachment to something. You are attached to something in your consciousness, not with your hands, but in your consciousness. So there's the self, and there's the images on your mind, and you attach yourself to those images, to those ideas, to those beliefs. Ha-ha! There's our friend belief again. And so that's why you argue, because you're attached to your belief. And in the argument, you're making yourself very emotional. A little bit of anger, a little bit of fear. So if you keep doing that, if you want, yeah, and that's what many people do. They spend their whole life arguing with everyone. You know, feeling that this is life, this is how I feel alive. And so they generate these emotions quite deliberately, but they don't realize that they're sabotaging themselves. They don't realize that the anger and fear, the mix of the two in the process of the argument, is coming from their attachment, which means their non-freedom. You know, their dependency on the belief that they have in their consciousness. They're holding on to it. It's become their support. It's become their sense of who I am. It's become their sense of identity. This is what I believe. This is what I think should happen. This is, I'm right and you're wrong. Yes, and this is what we do. I'm sure many of you recognize this. And we don't realize that we're just doing it to ourselves. Yeah, and so the other person has their belief, their opinion, their point of view. That's fine. Everyone has that. No one's right, no one's wrong. Everyone will change their point of view a few minutes, a few seconds, or maybe a few hours or a few weeks later. It'll change, it'll be a different point. They'll be looking at things differently. And as I will look at things, well, that's fine. So let me be open to seeing things differently. Let me be open to other people's points of view. Let me be open to seeing through their eyes. And so when I do that, then the unrelaxed emotional states disappear. And I was just sharing with Artie earlier on that one of the beliefs that we've kind of absorbed along the way is that love is just another emotion, that happiness is just another, joy is just another emotion. No, they're not. For me, maybe for you still, but they're not emotions for me. They're natural states of being. When you're in a truly loving, which means selfless state, then you're not emotional. But we've learned to believe that love is romantic. Yeah. We've actually learned to believe that love is fear. Oh, I really care about you. I'm so worried about you. I really worry about you. And I have to tell you I worry about you, because that means that's how I show you that I care. Care is love, worry is fear. So suddenly love becomes fear. No, that's what we've learned. That's what mum and dad taught us. I'm so worried. Why are you worrying, mum? Because I care about you. No, you don't. You're scared. You're scared for me, for how you will feel if something happens to me. Oh. Now, that might be a little bit too much for many, but for me, that's why we get the emotion and the natural state mixed up. And then we just call love another emotion. We call happiness another emotion. And then, well, you know, happiness becomes something called pleasure. And when we think, oh, I've got to find my next pleasure. I've got to find something out there before I can be happy in here. Another belief. Yeah, no one teaches us, if we're pretty unlucky on the journey through life, that happiness actually has to come from inside. That love comes from your own consciousness, your state of consciousness. Your highest state of consciousness is a loving state by nature. But then if we just call them other emotions, where do they begin? Where do they end? Where does fear begin and love end? They're the opposites in a sense. They're different vibrations of the same energy of consciousness, but one is distorted and one is natural. Fear is a distortion. Love is natural. No one teaches us that. Yeah. And then when we're scared and angry and sad, what do we say? We say, well, it's human nature. And we use that belief to give ourselves the excuse for not doing anything about it. And so we make ourselves unrelaxed. We get scared and we get really angry. And are we sad? Oh, I'm terrible. And so human nature, everyone's sad, everyone's scared, everyone's angry. So much mom and dad were angry, so much human nature, nothing I can do. And so I'm actually giving myself an excuse not to set myself free of an unrelaxed state. Because when you're scared, you're angry, you're not relaxed. I'm not relaxed at that level. So it's essential to understand my consciousness and notice there's me and there's the idea, there's the image, there's the belief in my mind, and I am not my mind. And it's learning to look at that and not get trapped in that. Just like when you watch a movie, you get trapped in the story, you get trapped in the character, your body's sitting in the chair, but you're in the character. And so as you look at what's going on in your mind, it's easy, it happens in a split second, a fraction of a second, for you to get trapped in what's on your mind. Yeah. And that's where attachment takes place. And if someone touches that or moves it or threatens it, or if that image in your mind represents something outside like a car, someone touches the car, they touch you, then you take it very personally. And this is why we take things very personally. So it's necessary to understand what's going on within me, not within my body, within my consciousness. Whether you call it soul, spirit, psyche, consciousness, doesn't matter. The label doesn't matter. But within the energy that I am, it's necessary to understand. And that takes us into the fourth level of relaxation, which is the level of the heart of me, the core of me. Yeah, and some people, they call this the spiritual level. Some people call it the soul, or the essence of who I am. And here's when you encounter, you know, the deepest questions. And if those questions are not answered, in other words, if I'm not clear in myself, then they will ripple out and affect the other three levels, basically. And there's three questions which are useful to engage with to begin the process of finding a deeply relaxed state of being, not doing, state of being, state of consciousness. Three questions. Question one, who am I? In other words, if I don't know who I am, I confuse myself by identifying with everything that I'm not. If I don't know who I am, what I am, who I am, I confuse myself by identifying with everything that I'm not. And that's why we dance around every day. We dance around. One minute we're identified with the job we do. Next minute we're identified with the country we come from. Next minute we're identified with our family. Next minute I identify with the clothes in our wardrobe and the labels, etc. And so we dance around. And if anyone threatens to take those away or threatens to insult them or so on, we get very upset. And because I don't know who I am prior to all those false identities. I don't know who I am prior to dancing around to the dance. It is a dance. Life is a dance. And it is a dance between all of those things. But the mistake is I use them to build my sense of who I am. And it's not new. It's why marketing and advertising are so successful. We fall into that trap of doing that every day. And of course, well, we say that's life, that's normal. and we don't connect the fact that we are dissatisfied at the very deepest level, because we're kind of using those, misusing all those things to build our sense of who I am. And if you build your sense of self out of anything you're not, everything you're not is subject to change, movement, loss, or whatever. And so if that's the case, then you are subject to uncontrollable change, movement, loss. And that's where your feelings of insecurity come from. That's why we feel so insecure in ourselves. Yeah. So the slightest little word from the politician here, from the boss there, or from the partner in the house here, suddenly they trigger our insecurity because they're threatening who I am. And so that's why it's necessary to come inside and realize who I really am prior to all those ideas and images and so on that we're fed. And then that leads to the second question of what I am. In other words, we talked about it earlier. What is my true nature? What is my natural state? Is it fear, anger, and sadness? Or is it love? Is it happiness, joy? Is it contentment? And the easy answer to this is, when you go searching for a workshop or a seminar, do you go searching for, yeah, come to our seminar and we'll make you the angriest person in the world. We'll teach you how to be scared for the rest of your life. Oh, you think you're sad now? We'll make you permanently depressed at the seminar. No, you don't. We would say, well, that's unnatural. That's unnatural. And yet at the same time, we're arguing for, oh, well, this is human nature to feel like these, not realizing we create them. No, they're unnatural. That's why you don't look for places to go where you can learn to be more angry, more fearful, more sad. It would be unnatural. So the natural state is, yeah, the titles of the seminars, how to be happy and how to find love in your life, how to be more loving in your life and at peace within yourself. That's why we're attracted, because we're really attracted back to our own nature, because deep down we have a memory. It's what I am. It's what I am. The big mistake there, though, is believing, keyword belief, that I can find these things outside. That these can be delivered by the seminar, by the guru, by the book, by my George. No, not possible. It has to be self-generated. It has to be self-discovered. It has to come from inside out. It's already there, but it's about sitting quietly and burrowing your way through all these illusions, the beliefs that keep you separate, in that sense, from those natural states of being. So this is the second question, what am I? And ultimately, if you learn how to meditate or just be more contemplative, more introspective, you'll begin to feel these natural states. They won't be emotional disturbances, there will be natural feelings arising from inside out. And then the third question is, why am I here? In other words, what's the purpose of life? Why am I here anyway? Some people go straight to this question without kind of covering off the first two. And you kind of need to cover off the first two before you get to the third. Don't come to this question first. This can only really get clear if you have had the insight, the aha moment. Ah, that's who I am. That's what I am. Okay. Then that informs your understanding of the answer to the third question. Why am I here? Why am I living? Well, actually, I gave you the answer in the simple terms. Purpose of life is to live. It's as kind of simple as that, but that doesn't compute for us. Oh, surely it's much more complex than that. Oh no, that's too simple. Purpose of life is to live? Come on. And if you think about it, if you watch nature, and nature is always a good metaphor to draw from, is that, the tree doesn't have a special, the bush doesn't have a special purpose, the flower doesn't have a special purpose, they just be themselves, and they live as themselves. They live as themselves. Yeah, and so do we live as ourselves? No, we don't. That's why we're so unrelaxed, because we're not living as our true self. Yeah, and so when you know who you are, know what you are, then this question, why am I here, That's a simple answer. I'm just here to live my life. Okay, all right. I give you the excuse to ask the next question. Well, how do I live? Okay, so, all right. So then it's about what you're doing all the time. What are you doing all the time? As a human being, what are you doing all the time? You can't avoid what you're doing all the time. You cannot, even when you do it terribly, you're still doing it. And it's called creating. You're creating thoughts, ideas, images. You are being creative. So how do I live? I live a creative life. And of course, creativity itself, I could do a separate lecture, has different levels. You know, there's painting and poetry. That's the kind of external level, which begins in the mind. And then there's the creativity of what thoughts you're thinking, how you put those thoughts together and dance inside your mind, painting pictures inside your mind, using your thoughts, because they're like the brushes and the colors, and your feelings. What feelings should I create? In other words, what should be my state of consciousness in my highest creative stage, which will then express as my behavior? And how do I interact as I express in my behavior? That's creativity. It's how you interact with people. What's the response that you're creating to those around you? Right now, we take time to work out, what do I say? What do I do? But when you're in your natural state, you just naturally respond. In other words, you create from the core of your being because you know who you are. You know what your nature is. So whatever flows from there is accurate. It's not right or wrong. It's just flowing from there. Without thinking, without feeling, just it's flowing easily. Don't have to think, did I do the wrong thing? Did I do the right thing? I say the right thing. What should I say to this person? No, there's none of that going on. There's just this natural. You are, by nature, creating accurately. That's maybe a little bit further down the line, who knows. So each of those areas, as I said at the beginning, is connected, and unless you kind of, this may be early days, but ultimately, unless you answer these sort of, who am I, what am I, what am I doing here, the sign that those are not clear for you is there's a kind of anxiety. Some people call it existential angst. It's just, I'm not comfortable. Something's not right. Something's missing. And so that something is really your awareness. That's not how I know. And so that is the ultimate realization. It's who you are, what you're doing. And if you don't have that realization, then it kind of ripples down. That angst ripples down. So you start searching outside, you get very attached to people, you get very attached to things. And so whatever you get attached to is going to make you suffer because it changes. And when it changes, you get upset and you think it's that making up. No, it's because you're attached to that you're upset. And so that's because you're searching outside for what's inside. You're searching for happiness out there. It's already inside. It's already within you. So you're just looking in the wrong direction. Unless you know that that is your natural state, then you will naturally search. This is why people get very attached to their belief and belief systems, because it seems to give them a sense of security, which is a moment of freedom from the anxiety of living. And so they use the beliefs, they use the understanding, the ideas as a sense of support. And so when someone challenges that support, they get very defensive. So they lose their relaxation. And so you can't go out to find yourself. You have to come back in. And then when you come back in, when you find yourself, the energy that you're giving out is natural. It's easy. It's light. It's relaxed. And that's the energy you then are able to give to your body. And you ask any healer. Maybe not doctors so much, but healers, they'll say that the body is ruled by consciousness and it will reflect your state of consciousness over time. So any illness in the body, anything that goes wrong in the body is because there's something kind of out of sync in your consciousness. So when the sink is there, that sink is restored, who I am, what I am, where I'm going, then the energy you're giving to your form is accurate energy, and it maintains. But again, that's another seminar too. It's good. I kind of think that's enough. What time is it? Wow, goodness me. Yeah, that's about right, I think.
Yes. Would you like to do a short meditation, please?
Yeah, shall we, that would be a good idea, really. So let's have a little meditation on all of that, and you can play with that to, what is it they say, to your heart's content. So let's do a meditation on the contentment of the heart. So I'm going to ask you to look away from the screen if you like, so that if you look at the screen, you just start watching the movements and start, it just triggers the judgments and what's going on and so on. Whereas if you look away from the screen, just rest your eyes somewhere, and you can close your eyes if you want. Just rest your eyes somewhere and relax your body in the chair. Not difficult to do that, especially on a Friday night. It's just to take your awareness through your whole body and see if there's anything tight or tense or not quite. And if you find any tension or tightness, just let it go. So your body is relaxed in the chair. And just focus your attention on your breath, your breathing. Follow your breath. That means you take away your attention from everything around you. Just bring it back to your breath. And if you want to close your eyes, you can do that. It's okay too. But don't fall asleep. It tends to happen when we close our eyes. And just watch your breath. Full cycle. And then bring your awareness to yourself and just see if you can be aware of yourself being aware. Within your awareness, within your mind, on the screen of your mind, just create a simple thought. At heart, I am a being of peace. At heart, I am a being of peace. Allow that thought to pass across your mind, but very slowly. And then let that thought, let it go, let it dissolve into the background. And notice what remains here at the heart of your being. There's a feeling of peace. There's a feeling of contentedness. As if in this moment I've forgotten everything else. I've forgotten everyone else. I need nothing. I desire nothing. I am content. Mind is quiet. There is a stillness here at the heart of my being. I and I'm very content to be still. And quiet. And calm. Silent. And still. And then I bring my awareness back to the room around me. And I bring that stillness, that contentment with me. And as I listen through these ears, I hear from that stillness. As I look through these eyes, I see from that contented state.
Thank you, Mike. So your wishes come through, questions have flown in, and I'm going to start by putting two of them together. And the first question is, you say it's all about me. So how do you deal with a person who has some serious issues, i.e. constantly lying, and you have to be around them a lot? And the question that I will put with that is, can you unpick a little more, the other person is never the problem?
Well, anyone who's lying is hiding something, you know, and whenever anyone is hiding something, it means they're in a state of fear. Oh, excuse me. And that fear is a form of suffering. So therefore, they are trying to disguise their own suffering. They may not be aware of it. They may deny it. They may not realize that honesty is the only way out, in a sense. And so you do, if you realize that, Yeah, and it's not that they're lying to you. Remember, they're creating their version of you. They're lying to their version of you in their own consciousness. Tricky, isn't it? And so if you can see that, then instead of projecting your judgment or your criticism, oh, you're a liar and so on, you shouldn't be lying. You know, instead of creating a version of them in your own consciousness, which you're now attacking, oh, you're always lying. Instead of doing that, then you will have compassion. There'll be understanding. Yeah, they're lying because they're hiding, because there's a fear of being revealed. And so they're in a state of fear, they're suffering. And what's the human response to suffering? It's compassion. But you need to get to that state yourself. You have to realize that they are in a state of self-created suffering, and that only your compassion can help them. Now that compassion is comprised of understanding and some kind of empathy. You understand they're hiding something and you have empathy for their suffering. There must be a fear there. It might be very good at disguising their fear, but there's a fear there. That's what's making them lie, because they're attached to something. They don't want to be found out. Yeah. Now, the other answer to that question is, well, have you ever lied? Do you ever lie? I could say that everyone is lying all the time, but they're not aware of it. They maybe think they're being honest, but actually they're lying. And one of the biggest lies we tell ourselves is when you look in the mirror in the morning and you believe that what you see in the mirror is you. Oh, I lie to myself every day. I'm trying to get free of that lie. That's a lie. That's not me. But that's what I've been taught to believe. So I've been taught a lie. It's okay. Mom and dad taught me that. It's okay. Their mom and dad taught them that. In other words, we see ourselves as finite physical forms. Whereas the reality is, the truth is, I'm an infinite spiritual being. I mean, that sounds easy to say, but it's quite challenging to live. But if I have the humility to admit, well, I'm lying every day to myself, first of all, and to others also, then it kind of takes this, you're always lying. The third answer is, why are you taking it personally? Because you expect them to behave differently. So you're attached to an expectation of them behaving in a certain way. And so you're making yourself upset when they don't behave the way you expect. In other words, they don't live up to the idea that you have of them. In other words, you're a version of them. That's why you're taking it personally. Yeah, and so relationships are tricky. I mean, but that's where we learn the most. That's our classroom. So there's kind of three levels to the answer. I'm not sure if that's clear, but I can't remember your second question already.
I think you've covered it. I think that's good.
Okay.
And the next question is, what is the wisest jewel of wisdom you have ever heard or you would impart to the world?
Oh, that was your second question, really. It's not them, it's me. The other person is never the problem. Yeah, that's an easy thing to do. It's an easy thing to say, but it's so difficult for most of us to live because we've learned the opposite. We're taught the opposite every day. We read the opposite in the news. And so you get this and you set yourself free of so many habits, of thinking, critically and making yourself upset and so on. You free yourself from so much, but only when you start living it, you know, when it really comes from inside. Right now I'm saying it from outside, and so it's what I heard too many, many, many years ago. I'd hear it in different ways before I really, and I still fail, where I really get it on the inside. It's not them, it's me. So whenever I react to anyone, I take myself away to a corner. It might just be for a few seconds or a few minutes. And I just go, wait a minute, hold on a second. It wasn't them, it was me. Now, what did I do? What am I doing inside my consciousness that is making me fall back into the illusion that they are responsible for what I'm feeling right now? And if you look around the world today, that's what you're watching. You're watching conflict, abuse, addiction, dependency. It's all based on this idea that I'm not responsible for me, someone else is.
Okay, next question. Mike, do you believe that we all have a life purpose or many purposes? I hear a lot lately in personal development work that we have a why which drives us. But I haven't quite worked it out. What's your view?
It's not right or wrong to have a purpose. It's not bad. It helps to focus your energy, just like a goal, really. It's good to have goals. It helps to focus your energy, but don't get attached to the goal. You know, in other words, don't turn the goal into, you know, something that you use to define you. So it's the same with a purpose. You know, it's good to focus your energy to have a purpose, but be flexible. Be ready to have your purpose change, you know, in different situations with different people. You know, I kind of expressed it earlier on, the purpose of life is to live. And when you're living naturally, you don't need to think, oh, my purpose is. You know, in one sense, only the ego has a purpose. My purpose is. So in other words, as soon as you start thinking, my purpose is, that's the ego talking. And then you'll be upset when you don't find the world around you giving you the chance to serve my purpose, be purposeful, make it happen the way I believe I realized in that seminar last week. So it's only the ego that kind of really has a purpose, but it's not. It's a kind of useful thing in an interim, but don't get attached to it. Be prepared for it to change. And then ultimately, you know, you'll get a sense of this, that you know, the purpose of life is to live. And if you look at a flower, a tree, or anything in nature, you know, it's just living. It's natural. It's nature is natural. And so your nature, when it's natural, to be loving, to be content. You're not thinking, now I'm loving, now I have to be happy, now I've got to be more joyful. You're not thinking that, you just are. It's just flowing from the heart of your being, from your true heart. And you don't need a purpose when you're natural, when you're in your nature. And so if there's a purpose, it's to rediscover your natural state. That's why some people say, and some people, I'm not saying them right or wrong, they say you have two purposes, one in action, one in the world around you. Some people say your highest purpose in the world of action is service, to be of service to others. But then the other purpose is to restore your full awareness of your true state of being. To restore your full awareness of your true state of being. And your true state of being is this infinite, unlimited, conscious being that on its journey has been trapped, has trapped itself in limited things and finite things and objects and people and jobs and money and so on. These are finite things. And so that's why we feel trapped by these things. So it's to play with those things, but not be trapped in those things. So when you're not trapped in those things, then you can be natural, you can be easy. In whatever situation, whatever person comes in front of you, you respond naturally. In other words, if they lie to you, you're not affected by it. It doesn't bother you. It's their journey. It's their bit, part in their play. It's their responsibility. It's not mine. I'm not affected by it. It doesn't bother me. I don't expect them to be a certain way. Do you see? And that's freedom. See the freedom in that? I'm much bigger than someone else telling a few lies. Much bigger than that. I'm still here for them. It's not that I reject, because that's what comes after judgment. It's not that I criticize. It's not that I have expectations of them. I'm here for them. If they want me, they're great. If they don't, they don't. And there might be a moment I have to walk away and say, well, I've got to go and do this now. See you later. Bye. Instead of going, oh, I better stay here and make sure they're okay and fix them. I've got to fix them. Oh, they're not in a good space. No, let them. And stop interfering. Sorry, I keep laughing at my own.
There are many, many thank yous coming through, Mike. Thank you for taking the time and being with us this evening and sharing those four levels of relaxation. And I'm going to thank the audience for joining us and being with us tonight. And we look forward to having you with us in the future. Good night and thank you.
Thanks very much, Artie. Take care.